Hello, everyone. It's the Magic Apothecary. Mary Elizabeth McCurry here with a little podcast for you. It is November of 2018, and I'm sitting thinking about all kinds of things, getting prepared for the winter solstice. Everyone else is getting prepared for Christmas, and I am getting prepared for what is known as Yule or winter solstice. And also, I've been quite busy investigating other forms of spirituality besides Wicca. And why am I doing that? So here we are today to discuss that. I'm going to discuss that. I wish some of you were here with me to discuss that. And we can arrange that in the future. If you do want to be a participant in the podcast, I can hook you up by phone and we can talk while we record. And that would be fantastic. I'm always looking for interesting people and interesting things to discuss so we can spread the word of good paganism and witchcraft throughout the world. You can find me here on different places. On Podbean is where I publish. Also, you can find me up on Spotify, my podcast, The Magic Apothecary. I almost always put it up on my website. It's up on my website as well as on my Facebook pages. So you can find me on Facebook, The Magic with a K, M-A-G-I-C-K, Apothecary. And also you can find themagicapothecary.com. It's pretty easy to find me. And there's listings here with all of my stuff in the main page on Podbean too. So you can find me anywhere. If you want to write to me and ask a question, you can also check me out on Instagram and find me there. I'm up there on The Magic Apothecary and The Singing Sorceress, because I am a singer as well as a magician and a witch. And so there's that. And I'm just about anywhere you want to find me. You can find me and write to me. Ask questions about witchcraft, tarot cards, astrology. I'm not an expert astrologer, but I can point you to the greatest on the planet if needs be. And I can give you general information on that. And I can talk to you about herbs. And I can talk to you about spells. And I can talk to you about magic of all sorts and meditation and anything else. I do consultations. And I also create spells and parts of spells for people who are interested in those kinds of things. Please do not ask me to sell you dragon's blood or amulets. That's not my thing. I make stuff from scratch. I'm a kitchen witch. I'm a person who makes things for people. I use maybe dragon's blood if I need to, but I don't sell powdered things so you can do your own thing, although that is fine with me if you want to. So anyway, that's me, and it's the same old thing I say every time, but just in case you want to reach out, and people are doing that, I'm getting more and more people feeling they want to speak to me, and they write to me on Facebook, and I am very happy if I have information to pass it along to you at any point. Okay, so we're listening to something called Spell Work from a group called Ostra, and I have this nice playlist up on Spotify. It's not mine, it's just called Witchy Music. And I love it. It's got all kinds of cool modern pieces, and it's cool. It's eclectic. Anyway, so let's talk about the holidays. So I am into educating people about Wicca and witchcraft. Now, let's say this again, like I say it every time. There is Wicca, which has witchcraft in it if you so choose, or it doesn't have to. Wiccans don't always do magic. All witches are not necessarily Wiccan. There's a lot of choices, but let's talk about how this happened a little bit, and then I'll get into the Sabbat, or the story of Yule and winter solstice. And I'm going to talk to you today a little bit about how to prepare your altar and how to get things ready for yourself. If I sound a little nasal, I apologize. I have had the flu for about a week, so sorry. Trying my best. So let's talk about Wicca. What is Wicca? W-I-C-C-A. And how are you a Wiccan? What does this mean? Well, originally, way back in the 1950s, there was a gentleman named Gerald Gardner who owned a store, front of sorts, or a building of sorts called the Witch Museum in England. Okay, and you can look him up, and he's called the Witch Father, actually. There's a great book out about him called Witch Father, which I've read, and it's wonderful. And there's also other books out, one in particular by Aidan Kelly about how he created Aidan Kelly, about how Gerald Gardner created Wicca. And that is true. Gerald Gardner did create Wicca, not alone. He had help. So let's go and discuss him a little bit and very quickly. And one day I will probably do a podcast all about that. and we'll sit down with dates and times and names and information that you can look up and study if you're so interested. But most people just want to get the general idea. What is Wicca? What does that mean, you guys? Well, Wicca. Well, Gerald Gardner had been working with Aleister Crowley very briefly, and at one point became part of the OTO, the Order of Orientis in England. Let's leave it at that, the OTO. That's something else that's a big study and something very much to look up and really get involved in. But for now, we'll just say he was involved in a very mystical, high magic group that worked with a lot of ancient Egyptian magic as well as some Hinduism. And that's what's going to bring me to my second part of my talk today. And also different kinds of Kabbalistic magic, Hebrew magic, numerology, all these kinds of things. Aleister Crowley could be considered maybe the father of modern magic in England, Europe, and again in America. But it is Gerald Gardner who brought it here. He is the one who brought it. He didn't bring it. He sent it here. Okay, so how did that happen? Long story, but let's make it short. So Wicca, the word Wicca, is based on an old English pronunciation of the word witche or witch or witcha or witch. So W-I-C-C-E, witche. What was that? What does that mean, witch or witche? What is that? How does that pertain to Wicca? Well, people used to, in the old days, before the witch burnings, and then maybe some after, but mostly before the witch burnings, which were predominantly in the late 1500s into the 1600s, all the way into almost the 1700s, through many places in Europe, and of course here in Salem, in America. So what a witch was, or a witcha, was a wise person or someone who could bend fate. And what does that mean? It means that somebody who was able to maybe save your life, maybe help you have a baby, maybe get your mind straight about some marital issues, maybe help you to find your path in life, maybe lots of things. So witcha or witches or midwives were women, predominantly women, because women for many, 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 many centuries in our human history were the ones who gave birth, nursed babies, and raised them while there were men or stronger women or women who were not giving birth or maidens who were hunting and doing other kinds of work for the tribes that we lived in at the time. And those tribes persisted until we had towns. So for many, many centuries, we were tribal. And women had certain responsibilities because of the birth and death issue of our human species. So women were in charge of birth, health, death, everything to do with those things. So they were about fertility. They were there about labor. They were there with baby care, nursing mother care, infections, illnesses, measles, mumps, you name it. Anything that came up and killed children and or their mothers or anyone in the tribe, women that were there to with carrying knowledge from their ancestor, females, who passed on herbal knowledge, meditation knowledge, rocks and crystal care, and medical care of all sorts, right? So this is where the idea of the wise woman comes from. So Gerald Gardner took this idea, and he called it Wicca. So what he did was take some stuff from Aleister Crowley and some stuff. I'd like to say this in a more, you know, general way. Stuff, things, ideas, magical systems from Crowley's work and a few other people. And so I'll get into that. I mean, I will do a history podcast, I promise. He took all that, put it in the cauldron, put it together, and after grabbing all of the information he put together for his witch museum in England, knowing a lot about the witchcraft sort of in England, he said that he was, as a child, initiated into a Black Forest coven by a woman who said to him to come and join because she saw he had talent, and they taught him the basis of Anglo-Saxon, Northern European witchcraft, and that, and the combination of the work he did working with Aleister Crowley and others like him in the 20s, 30s, 40s, 1900s, 1920, 30, 40, and the mixture of that and the black forest coven is where he said, this is Wicca. I've made Wicca. This is Wicca. This is what was passed on to me. Many, many people have investigated this and have discovered that probably he was not an initiate into any coven of any sort, and that there probably wasn't even a coven that existed. That's what a lot of people believe. I don't know. I wasn't there. Can't tell you for sure. But he did know a lot about magic, magic ritual, and that kind of a thing. He wasn't so much a witch that dug roots and made spells. That's a different kind of a thing. I'll get into that in a minute. So this is a cool song, right? I love this stuff. There's somebody named Lotus singing that in the background. So there's that. He blended that together. He formed groups. He initiated people into the system, and it grew from there. And he very much, and we'll get into the names and dates and stuff again in the history podcast, and I will do that, wanted very much after a time to get an American group going. He sent Alex Sanders to America. He said, please go. And it's true, Alex was going anyway, came here to America and formed a branch of Wicca on Long Island, New York. And from there, everything grew. Now, they changed a little bit of what they were doing from the original Crowleyan Wicca, and it became very eclectic and very American. Most everything that comes here sort of gets integrated into our mindset, which is there's freedom, and which is we can create a system of religion if we feel like it. We have freedom of religion. We can make up a religion if we like. So we did. A lot of people did. They took his basic ideas and spread throughout the country. Slowly at first landing in New York City, basically rooting in the East Village of New York, and also in parts of Brooklyn with a couple of men who were very famous for rooting themselves in the New York City witchcraft scene and who initiated many people who went on to become great writers and producers of the knowledge of witchcraft, which we really have in our sort of hippie beginning roots in the 1960s in America. So that's a very short version of a very long story. And if you want more about that, you know, just go and Google some of that stuff. There are YouTube videos about that stuff that you can just watch. There's pictures, there's books and books and books, and you can just immerse yourself in the history, because by now it's gotten to be a pretty big history. We're getting it to be a longer, more well-known and many multifaceted religion, Wicca. So there's that. So if you're somebody who's Wiccan, you've been initiated into this path that was created by Gerald Gardner. Leave that there. Now, what? There's other things? Yes. Americans and have integrated many different things into the basic tenets, idea, outline of Wicca, and that would include American, they call American eclectic witchcraft. By the way, a lot of people now call Wicca British traditional witchcraft or Wicca. That's a different situation than, you know, Santeria or Stregaria. The Santeria is very Latin African roots, and also Stregaria is Italian or Sicilian roots. And you also have people who follow the Norse pantheon very deeply, who are into the idea of Odin and that whole entire different kind of a Viking-esque, you know, a group, and plenty more. There are people who are involved in Native American work, although Native Americans are very reticent to want that. They don't want people taking their things and just sort of mixing it in a box of happy magic. And frankly, I don't blame them. So my opinion, people do what they like. Anyway, so if you're Wiccan, you've been initiated pretty much into traditional British witchcraft. If you're Wiccan, you can't call yourself Wiccan unless you're there. You see, you can be liking Wicca, sort of understanding Wicca, educating yourself on Wicca, being sort of interested in Wicca. But you can't say you're Wiccan unless you are following British traditional witchcraft. But you can say, I'm an American eclectic witch, or I am studying Wicca, and I've taken some of its tenets and I've mixed it into a practice of my own. So you really can't say you're Wiccan. Why do I say that? Because I am an initiated traditional witch. So I know what that path is, as I've done that path. And it's very clear. And very, you know, what it is. It's very black and white. This is what we do. This is how we do it. And there's very little to do, like I said before, with actual witchcraft. Very little. Or some, but not that much. Okay, so let that go. So there's a difference between a witch and a Wiccan. Can you be a witch and be a Wiccan? Yes. Yes. Can you be Wiccan and not be A witch? Yes. Can you be a witch and be something else? Yes. It's all yes. It's all yes. It's just take it seriously. That's my thing. I get all up about that all the time. So there's that. Take a look at that stuff. If you're interested in this work, it's important to understand how this stuff got here. Yes, it was here. And there are people that will say there are people who have been doing witchcraft for centuries all over the world. Yes, they have. And there are people that have been doing witchcraft in America for a long time. Yes, they have. Of course. There are also people that say that the women who were burned at the stake in Salem were not witches. Right. That's true. Go check that out. They weren't witches. There are also people that say there are women or men who are witches who like to deal with Satan. Sure. That's fine too. They do that too. See, remember, we're American. And like everything kind of goes here. So like anything you can say, check it off. Is it here? Does it exist? Yeah, it exists. And did it exist before? Certainly it did. Absolutely. Is there black magic? Yep. Is there white magic? Yep. Does it all exist? Yep. It's a matter of understanding it, deeply understanding it, not playing games with it, understanding that the power that's in magic and that the power that has been passed on in the information on this planet through our ancestors is extremely powerful. And do also remember that every religion, all the Abrahamian religions, including other religions in the Asian parts of the world, like India and Japan and China and Korea, those religions also have, and Native American religions as well, have very, very, very deep-rooted magical portions to them. Everything does. So, you can call yourself a witch and be living in a Hindu society and be a Hindu and still be a Hindu witch. Yes, you can. You can do that here. You can do that there. Oh, what? What, Mary, what are you talking about? I thought a witch had a pointy hat and a cauldron and a black cat. Well, I have some pointy hats. I like them very much, and I wear them often. I do have a black and white cat, and I've had black cats in the past, and that had nothing to do with being a witch. There's plenty of black cats to pick up off the streets, and by the way, if you are a witch or a Wiccan or a pagan of any sort, I very strongly urge you to do this. One, get involved deeply in animal rights, and two, get yourself involved in the environment, because one most important thing about being a pagan or a Wiccan or a witch is knowing that our mother, the earth we live upon, is sacred, and we need to protect her and all of the beings that she's created upon her body. That includes all of our brothers and sisters in the human form, as well as every animal, plant, rock. Yes, what? Rocks. Everything is considered sacred in this path. Every living thing is sacred. Every person, being, everything, sacred. Okay, so there's that. I have to get on my soapbox. But that's an important part of being involved in paganism and being involved in this path. So, Wicca, witchcraft, oi, what are we talking about? So many things. I know. It's a very complicated issue. When I first started doing this work way back, you know, in the prehistoric era, in the 20th century, I was extremely confused. Not only was I was confused, I was terrified. So if there's somebody listening out there who's terrified, I understand. I came from a very strict Catholic background. I was going to be a nun until I discovered boys and said, no nun, boys better. So there was that. But I understand being frightened the first time I went into enchantments, the original enchantments in New York City on East 9th Street and 1st Avenue. I thought the doorway to hell was going to open and I was going to go down a chute and that was the end of me. Little did I know that first step into that world was the step to my actual spiritual and soul level emancipation. And that is exactly what this has done for me and what it may do for you if you follow it. Okay, so there's that. Another thing to say, women out there listening, of course, I know there are men that listen, and God bless you, brothers, and I love you as well. But let me talk about the ladies for a moment first. Women can find, for the maybe first time, some of us, myself I speak for, the actual divinity within ourselves when we start to realize there is a goddess that has been sort of ignored and buried by the three major religions and many other places throughout this planet for centuries. That our female power has been cut off. That the power of birth, death, and life was in our hands, in our ancestors' hands, in female hands. Yes, male hands as well. Yes. I never say no, but majority of the people who handled these things were female. Women giving birth, women breastfeeding, women with children, or women who were maybe not women in the body, but who were women inside and thought and behaved and worked with roots and babies and death and birth the same as if women, as if they were actual biological female. And yes, there were biological females who were hunters, as I said before, who were warriors. That has always been the case. I don't delineate. I am not into two types of sexes. Believe me, there's everything in the middle. And that is a definite Wiccan and pagan thought pattern. Everything is one. We are all multifaceted pieces of the all, which is she. So there's me. Anyway, so if you are a woman, though, in this world of Trump and trouble and misogyny and backwards thinking amongst our unfortunately clouded and dark-minded brethren, our male and some female counterparts, especially in America and some other parts of Europe, if you're in that place and you feel less than, this is the way to go. This is a thing, this is a powerful key. And I think of Hecate when I think of keys, the goddess of the underworld, the goddess that holds the keys to the mysteries. The goddess holds the keys to the mysteries of being alive on this planet. Everything you need to know, she holds in her hands. That's my opinion. And I hope you would find out about that and take a look at those things and really explore. Because if you're here listening to me go on about this stuff, then I think you're interested. And if you're talking to me, if you're listening to me, then you're really interested because I am not playing games, kids. This is my life. I love the goddess. I am a witch. I have been a witch since birth and kind of knew it. So there's that. So spiritual paths, multiple spiritual paths under the sort of heading of Wicca are available to you. Just take a look at them. And if you are of other ethnicities, if you are African, if you are Latin, if you are a Native American or German or Italian or English or wherever you are from, anywhere in this planet, and Asian or Indian, take a look at the actual ancient religion of your people. Many people are lucky, and here's how I get into Hinduism, are lucky because their religion of origins, their ancestral religions are still viably alive, like the Hindu religion, like Buddhism. These are alive and living religions. So is Santeria, alive and living, still alive and living, breathing with the African pulse that was originally placed within it. But so many people from Europe, Europeans, say from all the way up in Scotland, all the way even into, you know, some parts of Scandinavia, of course, all the way down into Greece even. By the way, Greece just recently passed an edict recognizing that Greek paganism is a real religion, is a recognized religion in Greece. This has been centuries where it was not recognized as a real religion, although so many of us have actually learned about Zeus and, you know, Aphrodite and the Greek pantheon as though they were myths. Now that the religion is taking a deeper hold back in Greece again, they are now acknowledging that this is our religion. This is good. We're cool with that. We're not all just, you know, Christian Greeks. We're also can be pagan Greeks. We can be our own original ancestral religion is still alive. And that makes me very excited for myself, for you out there too. So find out. And I love this. I mean, a lot of people are anti-ancestry or 23andMe. They're anti that because they don't want to be cloned. And they don't, that's what I hear all the time. They don't want to be abused by the government. They don't want anybody getting their DNA samples. I understand that. But I have to say this. I've had it done, and I, for the first time, understood why I was so called to what I was called to spiritually. My people came from certain places on the globe. Then they came here. And there was something about the call of their religions, of their languages, of their ritual, of their gods and goddesses and their pantheons, god and goddess pantheons and magic and thought and voices and music and on and food that I was always called to, not even knowing where they were. Not even knowing for sure where they were. But now that I do know, I'm like, oh, well, that's why. Right? So I recommend it. If you're not sure, and many of us aren't, I wasn't entirely either, what your ethnic makeup is, to me, it's not even about being ethnic, it's about your ancestry, your ancestral bloodline, what those are. If you find out what those are, sure, we're all one, and we all came from
the African continent. We know this. We're pretty sure this is true. However, people moved around quite a lot, and tribes moved around quite a lot, and rooted themselves in their own traditions all over the globe. It's important to take a look at those things. And that is probably where your magical practices can start to come from, if you're not sure where they might be. I mean, how do you start? It's so overwhelming. I'm going on, and I'm just touching the surface, the tip of an iceberg. It's so much involved. So, speaking of ancestral work, here's how I'll segue. I have been for many years, I'm a singer, and I am a musical and sound healer as well, and I do Reiki, and I do other things that are not particularly witchcraft. But I do them because they're, to me, part of witchcraft as well. So here's what I've come to know and what I've experienced through studying sound and music healing. I started to realize that there were people in religions on the planet at the moment who are still using chanting and ritual and, you know, color and movement and many, many things to still find, still viably grab a hold on to their ancestral religious spiritual lines. So one of those things that I bumped into in my studies, and I've experienced many different people, believe me, so many people from so many different places on the globe, and I have experienced such beauty. But one thing, one of the first things that I ended up studying was chanting in the Indian style, from India, the subcontinent, India. So, okay, what is that? I don't even know what that might be when I first started. It was cool kind of yoga stuff, as far as I knew what that was. And when I started to delve into sounds and to syllables and to seed sounds that build the language of Sanskrit and chanting in Sanskrit and exploring God and goddess forms from India, I started to say, oh, holy shit, my God, S, what the fuck? I didn't even realize the depth of what I was going to experience. So doing all that, learning all that, bringing some of that into my practices, I do keep a separation. I do have certain gods and goddesses that I am very involved with as a Wiccan and also as an eclectic witch and also based on my ancestry. So different pantheons, different things for different reasons. I keep them separated. When I was coming up as a pagan, I was told by my teachers very clearly, maybe you don't want to put Lakshmi on the same altar with Aries because they're from different countries, cultures, and ideas, and they may not get along. I thought that was funny and pretty true. I said, okay, you know what? Let's keep these gods where they can be like working together, the energies working together. Okay, so it's sort of like almost like mixing foods in a way. I know that's a very mundane way to say it, so but it's a way people might understand it. It's like mixing, you know, anchovies with Native American cornmeal. It might be good. It might work okay, but it might not. So like this, different tastes and flavors may mix with work, but there's no guarantee. Oh, I'm sorry about that. I am actually recording on my phone because I'm quite sick and don't want to go sit at my computer. So I'm trying this out on the phone. If you hear ding dings, that's just my texts and stuff. So ignore those guys. All right. So Hinduism. So I started to follow different ideas and chants and movements, and my friends who were involved more in yoga and Hindu work and stuff would throw me ideas and I would study them and learn. And I bumped into a guy named Krishna Das. Now, a lot of people don't know who he is. Some people who do don't like him, and many people adore him. Doesn't matter. What he does is something called kirtan, which is a call and response sort of chanting thing. He sings out a sacred name in a form of musical movement, and then the audience or the participants will sing it back. And the first time I checked it out, I went to this big church in New York City on the Upper West Side, and there were like 600 or 700 of us together singing. And I have not really quite felt that kind of powerful movement. I have been to concerts. I've been to concerts with 10,000 people in the room, and those are powerful for sure. Depending on the artist, they can be extremely powerful and extremely spiritual. But just the large group like that chanting these sacred names, it's hard to explain the kind of alchemy, chemical change, mind change, body change, spirit change that can happen in a situation like that. So anyway, I've gone back every year since then. I've been there like 5 times. And I began to now really seriously think about, I'm going to, you know, delve into this more than just the chanting and singing, which I do on a regular basis, just to bring myself to a sacred space with the god and goddess, or just with the goddess, because there's really not a lot of chanting available for us in English. There's just not. I have explored Celtic, and I've been trying for like 3 years and failing miserably to learn how to sing or speak in Irish, which is part of my ancestry. But it's kind of tricky. And also, I went and looked into ancient English, medieval or earlier English texts, praising Mary and Jesus and that whole thing. But it just doesn't speak to me the same way as this other stuff will. It doesn't speak to me the same way as the chants that I've experienced. And that's my personal issue. Could be different for anybody. But these chants from India and in Sanskrit have been quite powerful for me. Now, is it appropriation? Maybe. I'm not trying to appropriate. I'm not trying to make any money at it. I'm just passing on to you guys something to check out. If you find a way to get also to a yoga studio and do stuff like Kundalini yoga or something called Bhakti yoga, which is devotional yoga, which is what Krishna Das does by singing the sacred names of the divine, then you can start to say, how can I integrate that into my practice as a magician? And how am I able to, well, can I use Hindu magic? Can I study that? Can I look at how that works? Can I look at their pantheon? Can I look at the Greek pantheon? Can I look at the Roman pantheon? Can I look at the Celtic pantheon and the Norse pantheon and the Native American? Yes. The answer to all those questions are yes. Let's start somewhere, though. So if you're in a yoga class, and it's kind of common, I was on Instagram yesterday, and I put up something. I made a whole line of chakra balancing formulas, which are on my Etsy store. And when I put that up on Instagram, I saw there were like 58 million posts under just the hashtag, yoga. What? Shit. That's fantastic, though. Not only are people using it, I think, I'd say the majority of people may be using it for physical exercise because they want to have hot abs, but I think a lot of people are also using it for spiritual workout, and I'm glad to know that. So, anyway, every single line of information I'm giving you, you can freeze me, write it down, and explore. I would hope that that's what happens. What I'm doing today and what I generally do in my podcast is I take a handful of information seeds and I toss them out into the world, and I hope that you guys can find what you're looking for, because, I've been at this for like 40 years and or more, and believe me, it never ends. And it's wonderful. And just follow the paths. Follow what makes you happy. Just, again, I will say, like I always say, and I'll get into Yule now, this is not American Horror Story magic. I cannot go to the underworld, although some people like Hermes can in the Greek pantheon. Mercury, he can go down there, but I'm not him. So I can't go down there and bring back the dead. There's no such thing as a supreme. By the way, there is no such thing as a warlock at all. That's a weird word that was made up during the witch burnings, and it means nothing. It's never existed. It doesn't exist. There were men, intact men, biological men who were witches, who were actually did the same work we're talking about. It was predominantly female, but like I said before, there were men who did the work as well. They were burnt at the stake as well, some of them, and whatever. There's no such thing as a warlock, American Horror Story, but it's fun. It's fun to make warlocks. It's fun to make spooky things happen. It's fun to believe that Jesus is up in heaven and somebody, Satan's kids, come along to try to blow us all up and make an apocalypse. It's fun to watch people do all that stuff, but it is not real. I can't. It's not real. I swear. It's impossible. You can do magic, and you can change things, and you certainly, I have seen spells work so well. I swear it's true. However, I cannot levitate. Well, some people in India, they say can, but I'm not so sure. I cannot fly. I cannot change my material. I cannot snap my fingers and be somewhere else in a moment. Maybe. I hear that there are Indian yogis that are very adept at these kinds of things that can actually, they spend most of their lives being able to do silly things like, jump from one place to another within 5 feet's distance. And this is their life's work. And frankly, it's kind of a waste of time. You spend 30 years trying to go from one place to another when you could just walk there. I don't get the point. I just don't. More likely, it would be better to find your way to the God and Goddess and to find your way to the supreme divinity that's inside of you than worry about that kind of magic. It's fun. It's fun to think that witches fly around in brooms, although I think they would hurt after a while. I mean, really? You're going to sit on a broom and fly around? You're going to what? No. You're going to make men, their eyes fall out of their heads? You're going to do, make piles of money to come your way? No. If you're listening to me because you want to get that guy to love you, stop listening to me because you're doing black magic and it's only going to hurt you and he's never going to love you. And if he does, or she does, you're going to turn out to be the biggest jerk you've ever known in your life and you're going to be stuck with them forever. Mark my words. You want money? Good. Think about it. Make spells and go and get the freaking money. And don't sit and just light candles and hope for the best. Magic and witchcraft and the power that's within us is the point. That is the point. Anyway, I also watched Sabrina. The Sabrina's, I don't know, something adventures. I watched the whole thing. It was kind of a cute comic book. It's not real. Not real. There's no portal to limbo that you can go to in the woods. 13 hung witches in the woods don't come and haunt people and try to kill them with the Grim Reaper. That was, if you didn't see the show, I'm sorry. No. Charmed? No. I watched two episodes and I fell asleep. Demons. It's all about demons are coming and Satan is coming and the witches have to beat them down and crap. But what I have said, and I will say again, those shows are very potent at the moment because we have a misogynist in the White House in America and all over this world, men are just blathering on about, you know, they're holding on to their patriarchy at all costs now. So women are being, you know, maligned, but women are rising and witchcraft is being revitalized because of it. Women are realizing, you know what, bitches, this is my power. I have power over life. I can heal. I can change things. I am powerful as a woman, and here's my power. So that's cool. So if you're watching Sabrina and it makes you feel excited about being a girl, because she's just a girl, good. Blessings on you. I'm so happy for you. So, so, so happy. But just know it's not real. It's a story. It's a myth. It's the same myth kind of idea that, you know, about, you know, things like Krishna or Zeus or Jesus. They're myths, stories. Some of them maybe have some truth in them from the past, but they've been blown up to be these great myths, and they inspire us. Those are what those stories do. They inspire us. So Sabrina inspires us, and the girls from Charmed, they inspire us. And American Horror Story, The Supreme, yeah, she inspires me too. I feel inspired when I watch some of that stuff, but it's not real. Just know that. If you want to do real magic, it's a spiritual path that is serious. And being a witch is serious. Wearing black lipstick and a pointy hat does not make you a witch. You have to work if you want to be a witch. So there's that. And on that note, let's talk about Yule. So if you want a pointy hat and black lipstick, I'm all for it. See, because I wear pointy hats and black lipstick, but I'm a witch. And I do it because I'm like, listen, bitches, I'm a witch. And see these tattoos? This is my spiritual path. And this is me as a witch. A regular lady walking around in New York City, you'd never suspect I'm a witch because I don't have a broom or nor am I levitating. But I am a witch and I am proud of who I am. And I will wear my pentagram in full sight. And I will speak my mind about it. But I don't levitate. I wish I could, though. You know, I really do wish, especially in New York City, that I could just, like, fly. Wouldn't that be great? Oh, I'm going to go to Manhattan now from Brooklyn. I'm going to go to Jersey. Ah. You know, how great. Bunch of bullshit. Okay? Bullshit. The point of it is, this is a spiritual path that our ancestors laid down centuries and centuries ago through trial and error and by watching nature, watching how the earth herself fed them and also kept them after they passed away and died and laid within her. Watching women give birth to babies and then watching these babies stand up and walk through seasons of life. So, seasons of life. Right now in the Northern Hemisphere, where I live in New York City, it is colder. It's getting to a place where it's going to be snowy and very cold soon. We're in right now at the very crux of December when I'm doing this. And it's chilly and the leaves have gone brown and We've gone through Samhain, which is the festival of the dead, and now we're in this sort of dark period. This, I always think of it as the night of the year. It's the sleepy time of the year. Dawn is coming, and dawn is coming on December 21st, which is the winter solstice. So let's talk about the winter solstice, and that is also called Yule, or if you like, it's called Christmas. I don't call it Christmas for a good reason, and I'll explain. So Yule is actually a German word for a fire festival that took place on December 21st. Also, if you look on Google and just type in winter solstice festivals, I promise you will find many. All around the globe, in the Northern Hemisphere, on December 21st, you will find many, many, many festivals of light. You have Hanukkah and Kwanzaa, and we have our own pagan, you know, winter solstice festivals, which are very fire-based. And then you have, of course, the Yule log, and you have people roll barrels of fire down hills and all this kind of thing. So what is this craziness? Well, this is people celebrating the return of the sun. There's a really wonderful video on YouTube that my friend Joseph sent to me once about the sun god and how all of these gods and all of these pantheons, including Jesus Christ, were sun gods of sorts. Dionysus and Osiris and so many different, millions of different names for the sun god. There's like hundreds of them. You can actually look for this video. If you're curious about it, maybe I'll find it and I'll put it up on this video when I'm, this is a podcast when I'm done in the descriptions, and you can take a look at that. But anyway, so what this is about, this festival of lights and festival of fire, is like we're really in a dark time now here. It's like, oh my gosh, the sun is down like at 3:30 and it's dark when you wake up. So you have a really short day of light. And our ancestors, they kind of rested during this period of time because really there was nothing to do. They had put their stores up, and they had actually, by this point, if we're talking about the agricultural times, had slaughtered animals and smoked meats and put away, you know, vegetables and root vegetables. And that's why we eat the things we eat at this time. It's what's here and available through the dark time before things start to grow again. And that won't happen really until sometime, and we won't have fresh food again. Our ancestors are not fresh food again until February or March. So they had these stores put away and had hunkered down and stay in the hut. You know, they did some work and they did cleaning and they did refreshing of their homes and they made clothing and they, you know, they did these kinds of things, but there was really, they took care of their animals, but there was really, they could hunt, but only when it was warm enough to be out long enough. So they couldn't really be tilling fields though, and there was nothing to gather. There was no fruit or vegetables out there. Yeah, there are roots you can still find. Yes, there are roots. And by the way, I'm an herbalist as well. So yes, there are roots out there. And I've studied that for 30 years. There are roots out there right now, including things like dandelion roots at the first frost that are so super powerful and at their peak. But that's roots, things in the ground. Everything's going down into the mother, into her womb, down into her. That's where everything is at this moment. Nothing is up yet. So everything hunkered down just like our ancestors were. It's cold and it's dark. So on December 21st, the days before and the day of, we have the winter solstice. So we have a time where the sun sort of almost looks like it stays still. If you can take a look again on Google, or if you like the Farmer's Almanac, which I love the Farmer's Almanac, it says so many cool things in it, and I like to look at it. You can look at the table of times that the sun sets, and every day you will see how much it goes down earlier and earlier and earlier, and then it stands still. Like there's several days where it stands still. And what this is the earth herself has been tipping away from the sun and away from the sun, and then it stops and then it comes forward again. So when it comes forward again, that little inhale and then forward, we all get more sunlight. And every day from December 21st until the spring equinox on March 21st, we get more and more and more light. So by Imolc, which is the next Sabbath after Yule or solstice, we start to see that there's actual light and we're not in the dark anymore. And people start feeling better. That's our American Groundhog's Day. And if you know that date, you know. It's like, oh, there's hope. We're not all going to die in the dark. There's actually spring around the corner. So right now, we're not there. We're in the dark time of the year. We're in a place where it's like we got to get through. We just have to stay home with our families and drink our apple cider and tea and hold on. That's it. And so one of the reasons why our ancestors started using lights and candles and bonfires and fires was to keep warm, was to enlighten themselves and say, look, enlighten themselves. Let's put some lights out. Let's put some candles on. Let's celebrate the return of the sun. And they really believed, and I do this every year. I have had the most intense experiences on winter solstice eve, staying up. I stay up every year until sunrise, and then I go outside in the snow or the rain or the hail. I don't care, with a drum if I can, and I stand there and I chant the sun back. Our ancestors truly believed that they needed to do that. They truly believed that the sun maybe wouldn't come back if they didn't ask him to. Him. But yes. And many, many cultures believe the sun is male or masculine. So if we didn't ask him to come back, he might not come and we'd all be dead and frozen. So people would do that. And when he came back, they would celebrate. And they would break out some food and say, okay, let's eat some of the food we saved because we know we're going to live for a few more months now. We're going to make it because the sun is going to help us grow things. And so let's celebrate. So in our current Christmas, you see so many of these things all around you. There's the lights. This is why we have Christmas lights. This is why we have evergreen trees, evergreen living forever kind of a thing. It's not so much about, maybe it's about everlasting life and the Jesus thing that people have plugged onto it. Sure, that's cool. But on the other hand, it's more about everlasting life, that we didn't die and that the God himself has come back for us. Now, let's talk about color for a moment. Green and red, green and red, green and red everywhere. Christmas, green and red. Everybody's got the green and the red, right? So what is that? Well, the mother, the goddess is represented by the blood, which is the red. And the green is the God being born again. So in Pagan Path, yes, we're talking about the sun returning, and there's your gold, and silver is the goddess. She's the silver snow. She's the stars in the sky. She's the silver face of the moon, and the god himself is the sun, the warmth of golden sun. That's why you see also gold and silver everywhere. Silver bells is a song we all sing, or many people sing, at this time of year, and that's what that's about. But the red is the mother, and the green is the child, the newborn baby god coming out of her. So he's the Holly King. No, the Oak King, excuse me, the Holly King. Holly King is here now, and he's going to pass away, and the Oak King will be born. And that's the king of the spring. That's the green man coming through. Green man, okay? The Jack in the Green. Even Peter Pan is a representation of the green man. So Robin Hood is as well. So these are our ancient traditions come into form of color and sound and light. It's the blood of the womb gives us the green god, who's going to come and grow through the spring and feed us. Simple stuff. Simple stuff. Very, very elementary stuff, but beautiful. So when you start to know these things, when I first became a studier of Wicca and witchcraft, because I am both Wiccan and witchcraft based, and I am also, by the way, I have studied Santeria. I am not Santerian, but I've studied it, and I study and work with Stregaria, which is Italian witchcraft from my father's family from Sicily and Calabria. But be that as it may, when you start to study these things and you start to understand, it's like you wake up for the first time in your life and you're like, wait a minute, I can see that the sun, I can see this, I can feel this, I feel the energy. It's oh my goodness, now that the earth is turned, the light is back, light is returning, it's back again, I'm going to live another year. You start to feel really at one with the earth. I see all around me people very depressed because it's dark and they're sad. I'm like, are you nutty? This is good. Take a rest. That's what I tell everybody at this time of the year. Just chill out. You know, all of this massive insanity about buying presents and all of this stuff, this is just commercial stuff that was made up by, you know, people like Coca-Cola. You don't have to do it. You don't. What we're here to do is celebrate another year of being able to live, to stay on this planet. We're here to thank the God and the goddess for giving birth to him, for saying, hey, okay, we'll keep you guys alive. We won't turn off the lights. You guys can eat another day. You can survive another day. Your babies will grow and flourish. And that's for me and you in the human form, as well as every bird, fish, for every form of wildlife out there is on this cycle. And when you start to beginning to look at the world and the way it turns, its natural forms, you start to really feel better. You don't have to be plugged into this holiday like a crazy consumer. If you feel very drawn to the Christian path, that's great too. Because if you can see that Jesus is the light, good. That's great, because he's a God form, and he's a cool God form. He's many things, and he is also a God form. So if that is something that you feel comfortable with, go ahead and do it. You also have his mother Mary and the manger and all the stuff that goes on, and the stars in the sky and all of those traditional myths are all based on the living and rebirthed God that had been there way before Jesus walked this earth, if he walked this earth. So take a look at these things. Explore them. I've given you so many seeds. I've been talking incessantly for all this time, and because there's so much to say. I hope I've enlightened you in some way. I hope that I can push this forward and have people hear and just don't have to be converted, because certainly I don't care if you do what I do at all. But it's, for me, it's like, wake up, take a look, look back. Now look back further. Like I said before, in India and in Tibet and many places in America, the Native American traditions in South America and all around the world, there are people that are still plugged into their traditional ancestral spiritual paths that are viable, powerful, and very alive. Unfortunately, many people are not. We got somehow sidelined, pushed off. The Romans marched up through the European continent, took over, and said, here, you're going to do it this way. Whatever you believe in, we don't care. Now you do it this way. Romans said, here, we have this God. This is our God. You pray to him or we kill you. And in their wake, they sort of sanitized everything and took it away. They took away the Druids. They took away the high priests and priestesses of the Norse. They decimated the Celtic pantheon. They took it away and covered it up in their own Roman Catholic sauce. But underneath that, mixed into that, deeply mixed into that, is our European paganism. And there is nothing wrong with finding it. And there's nothing wrong with claiming it. If I can help you in any way to do that, just let me know. I know a whole bunch of stuff. I've been studying and studying and studying for years, and I will continue to study until I'm dead. And maybe even after. I'll come back and talk more about it from the other side. But here you go. Blessed Yule and Solstice, my friends. May you receive all of the blessings from the God and Goddess that you want. May your path be lit by knowledge and power. May you find the thing that makes your heart sing. And may you find a connection to the divine that's always been yours since before your births on this planet. Much love and light and so many blessings. Looking forward to speaking to you next month or soon. Blessed be.